using your China sourcing skills for Amazon FBA selling. Global from Asia, number 114.
Welcome to the Global from Asia podcast, where the daunting process of running an international business from Hong Kong is broken down into straight up actionable advice. And now, your host, Michael Michelini.
February is almost over. It felt like it just started. Jesus, years is flying by. And we are almost in March, but for many in China, February was basically skipped over by Chinese factories. Some of you listening may be stressed out right now, wondering where your orders are. I know I've talked to some of you, and you're getting kind of excuses or reasons. Electricity's out at the factory, and orders on hold, and probably really they're just back ordered and out of, you know, like really trying to prioritize which orders should go out first, or maybe there's not enough staff coming back or something. So today's show is a good one for you guys. We have Chris Davey, who is back in the Amazon game, in the e-commerce game after quite some time. And he shares with us how he got back involved, some tips and tricks, and what he's used from his China sourcing experiences. We did this interview, we recorded it before Chinese New Year, so he's referring to dates about pre-Chinese New Year and order delivery. So I followed up with him afterwards. At the end of the show, we will patch in a little bit of what happened with his deliveries. Were they on time? And did it get to the Amazon warehouse and such? And before we get started, just a little another plug for our first annual cross-border summit on Saturday, April 16th in Shenzhen, China. Chris is going to be there. He's going to be with a few other Amazon sellers on a roundtable format sharing. And another update, we have ShenzhenParty.com on board as a media partner, which is really big news. Thanks, Brent. And they're going to be having their monthly wine and cheese event that evening. So it kind of aligns perfectly for our daytime event. And then we can all head over to the wine and cheese afterwards. So this event keeps getting better and better. So I always try to encourage you guys to get your tickets at early bird prices. For those details and more, go to crossbordersummit.com. And now into the interview. Okay, thank you everybody for tuning in to another show. We have with us a friend and now a longtime listener, Chris Davey, with us. Thanks for being here, Chris. Actually, when did you start listening?
Oh, I think I started, wow, pretty close to the beginning, actually.
Awesome.
So I don't know how long you've been doing it, but you know, I've been working out in China for nearly 4 years, and I know I was searching around for podcasts to listen to, and I found your one, you know, pretty close to when you started doing it. So
great. So yeah, we have it's gonna be a fun kind of story podcast today, and a bit of Amazon, a little bit of your story. Maybe first, you know, your how'd you get here from the UK? Maybe your China story to start.
Yeah, well, basically, I've been working in the UK for a company called Bowers & Wilkins. It's a speaker and headphone company making high-end products. And I've been working there in total, in the purchasing department for like about 17 years. I think I started there in 1998. Just started there as a junior in that office and kind of worked my way up. And I was working in the UK there, doing lots of different jobs, actually, in the department, including like buying companies in Denmark and then shutting them down and bringing them to the UK, involved in all of this sort of stuff. So quite in depth from a sort of purchasing point of view, you know, we were buying stuff, and then suddenly we were buying the company. Yeah. So suddenly it was becoming in-house manufacturing. Then basically one of the directors walked past me and happened to mention about that he thought I might be good working in China. And at the time I just got divorced and I didn't have any kids, and I thought, maybe it could be interesting, new start. Cool. So I dropped him an email and said, was he serious or was he joking? He kind of just strolled past me and happened to mention it, and it was gone in a flash. And he came back and said deadly serious, and then he didn't mention it again for another 6 months. So, but then eventually he did mention it again. And he was like, oh, we'd like to get you out of there like straight after Chinese New Year. I think he'd mentioned it in like July. So this was like coming around in sort of, I think it was January or something like that. He started talking to me. And then basically I came out in April.
Okay.
So that was April 2012. And what they wanted me to do was they would get a purchasing manager in place, a Chinese guy, and they wanted me to work with this guy and basically develop a 5-year plan for the business, which involved like visiting all of the suppliers, deciding which I thought were the good suppliers, which I thought were the bad suppliers, developing processes inside the company to control the purchasing, which was, you know, it was a little bit out of control at the time. You know, people, to give you an example, who were buying like wooden parts and from one company, and they were buying screws from the same company, you know, and they were, you know, that company was just buying the screws from the screw supplier and we weren't buying them directly. So in the first 1.5 years, something like that, I was out there. I think we tidied up a lot of this mess and started to get a better process in place, you know, that when drawings came through from the UK, that we reviewed them and decided who were the right suppliers to put them with. Whereas I felt like before, when I've been out there, a lot of the buyers hadn't really left the office very much. They'd just find suppliers from the internet. You know, they'd just randomly pick these suppliers and they never even visited them. So they didn't know what their core strengths were, really. So.
Got it. So yeah, a lot of work cut out. And so then that was 2012, and then you came out here first time. It's probably a lot of changes even since just those few years, right? Or how was it getting here, and how was it?
Yeah, I mean, I came to China in 2010, but just for a couple of weeks, visit a few suppliers.
Okay.
And I really loved it. So, you know, that was one of the reasons when I was kind of offered the job, I was like, I knew I really liked Asia and it was somewhere that I could see myself living for a while. So I pushed it a bit to come out. But anyway, you know, I was at the company. I left the company actually in September last year. But in between, I'd kind of done all the tidying up and the processes. And then I started doing a lot of new product development and new product introduction. So working on all of the new products and getting really heavily involved in sort of design and, you know, this is what the designers want, what can the suppliers make, et cetera, et cetera. Heavily involved in that. And I just finished off before I left the last project, which was in the UK. They just launched a new top of the range product, and a lot of the parts we were making in China. And to tell the truth, we really wanted to make them in the UK. But, you know, it's difficult to find the suppliers in the UK anymore.
Yeah, this is the thing, right? In the West now, I even worked in a small machine shop, a subcontractor in my earlier days, and that's gone. Everything is gone. So, yeah, I guess it's got to get rebuilt to ever come back, you know?
Yeah, and you know, I know the Chinese economy now is maybe flagging a little bit in the last few months, but you know, these guys, a lot of these suppliers, their thinking is like, you know, okay, I haven't got the right machine now, but if you give me the order, I'll buy it immediately. And I had that quite often happen in China, you know. And the other thing is because there is so much work in China, these guys are really being pushed by people to come up with new processes and, like, new finishes, which is obviously important when you're making some sort of cosmetic products. So you're dealing with maybe the same suppliers that Apple and Hewlett Packard and people like this are dealing with, and they're constantly showing you things that you haven't seen before, and they're constantly invested in new equipment and stuff like that to be able to produce it. And I think because the suppliers in the UK haven't got this, I haven't got the orders,
so
they're not really investing so much. So.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, I think a lot around the whole world is kind of like that. And like people always say, maybe Southeast Asia is going to take some of the manufacturing, like Vietnam or Thailand, but it's still hard to move some of this infrastructure over, right? Like all the machinery and molds and all that investment.
Yeah. Exactly right. You know, I've looked at Vietnam as part of my job, and we had some suppliers that had moved some of their business to Vietnam. But we have factories in, or the company I was working for, they had factories in the UK, and they had factories in, they had one factory in the UK, one factory in China. And, you know, for us to source it from Vietnam at this time wasn't cost effective, because you know, it was, you need to add all the shipping and everything, the import duty and stuff like this in, yeah, and then just didn't come out cost effective. And like you said, the infrastructure for everything else is so good in China. It's been built up over a lot of years that it's very difficult, I think, to move away from China in some respects at the moment. But obviously there is cost pressures on especially in like Shenzhen, Guangdong area, with like, you know, 20% price increases on labor every year by the Shenzhen government. So
exactly. Yeah, I remember 2010, there was they doubled salaries in Shenzhen. Like Foxconn just started saying they were going to double their factory workers because all the suicides happening. I don't even remember or heard that, but that was insane. And even in the offices, salaries were going up because it just pushed all the costs down the line up. And I still, I guess it's still hard for a lot of industries to be able to move for the near term. But I think let's move to something more interesting. So we've been chatting as you've been listening to the show, and like I said, it's great to get you on today. So you've been working on your Amazon, right?
Yeah, that's right. Last April I messaged you and asked you, can you get somebody on the show who can talk about Amazon FBA, but from a living in Asia point of view, because there's loads of podcasts out there and Facebook groups and stuff like that, but everyone tends to be like in the US or Canada or the UK, and nobody's really, at the time, nobody was really around talking about how to do it from China, because there are some differences and stuff like that. So I pushed you a bit, and you come up with a couple of people, was interesting. But anyway, and then the other day we were talking, and I told you that I'd launched my first product, so you said, let's get on the show. So.
Yeah, finally. Cool. Yeah. So did you get to structure it like from Asia, or how do you have your FBA business?
Well, the way it's done, the way I did it was, I actually started working about last May. I was still working at the company at the time, but I just kind of doing it as a sort of homework project at the time. And I had an idea for a product. My product was basically, there's already some designs out there for the product, but I thought I could make something much nicer. And I thought people were missing a trick, because there was only like very low-end products available. And I thought the market could take like a medium to high-end version of this product. So I started developing something, basically searched around for some suppliers, met some suppliers from Alibaba, some from exhibitions, and picked a few suppliers out that I liked. Went to visit three suppliers. Obviously, it's quite easy because I'm living here in China, so they're all in like Dongguan area. And went to visit three suppliers, and there was like one supplier that was obviously very, very good, but I was worried that, could I really give them what they wanted from a customer, you know, because at the time I didn't really know how many I wanted to buy. I didn't really know what the market could support to sell. So it was very difficult. But the sales guy like bent out over backwards and took me for a lovely meal at lunchtime and treated me really, really good. And, he told me that they could meet the small quantity, they could help me with the design, they could do everything. It sounded almost too good to be true.
let's see how that goes.
So later on, it did become too good to be true.
Man.
Basically, around 2 months down the line, suddenly this guy left and a new sales girl come in. And then they started saying, this material you want to use, it's like really difficult to get a hold of. It's like 300 yards minimum order of each. So that was like, I wanted to do five different colors at $3 per yard. So it was like $7,500 they wanted from me just to cover the material. And the material could make, you know, like far more than I thought it was going to sell in a year. So it all went a bit wrong. And so basically left that supplier and started with a smaller one. And actually the smaller one were pretty good. But yeah, I think you always struggle, you know, with these guys.
Exactly.
They're not always like telling you what they should be telling you at the time. So I was like, oh, I want to use this material. And they were saying, yeah, okay then. So they made me the samples. It took like about a month or something like that. We need to make a mold, make the samples.
Yeah.
And then I went to get the, I went to check the samples, and like two of the colors just looked really awful. And then the sales girl said, yeah, well, we knew it wouldn't work. And I'm like, well, didn't you tell me before, before we just wasted another month? Yeah. You know, it's like, if you knew it wouldn't work, why didn't you tell me? And I'm like, Oh, well, you said you wanted it. It's like, if you're the experienced ones, yeah, if you know it's not going to work, you really should tell me. Anyway, so then we changed the material and we made a few more samples, and eventually we got up and running. So I think originally when you asked me, I told you my project was going to launch in like October or something like that. And then it ended up arriving at Amazon in the 15th of December, which was a bit annoying.
Yeah, that's tough.
Yeah, and I had a lot of other problems in between, a lot of quality issues with the factory, you know, put my logo on upside down and all sorts of stupid things. Yeah, I mean, I ordered 1,200, and in the end, I was at their factory for 4 days, 100% inspected everything, because I just didn't have any confidence after I went there the first time.
Oh, man.
And we only got 928 good ones. So,
so for the listeners... You paid for the others, or did you pay for 982?
No. I didn't pay for them.
That's good. At least, and I mean, while it's painful, I think it's still better. You have the advantage. You're here, right? So, but I guess other listeners, and I know a lot of listeners aren't as fortunate, or I don't know if it is a fortune thing or not, but are back in the, you know, home in Canada or U.S. or Europe. They're not as able to do this, I guess, but they could still pay a service provider. There's plenty of these quality control. Do you think they would be able to help, like, as much as, of course, you're the owner, entrepreneur, you know, of the product, but would you think that they could have like a third party inspector kind of help with that type of process for them listening?
Okay, yeah, so I mean, I would really recommend that people get their goods inspected. My first delivery was 1200 pieces, like I said, and I went to the factory to inspect them, and on the first day, I just opened like one box, 50 pieces, and found half of them had some pretty major problem, which the supplier admitted, yeah, was a mistake, so it needed reworking, and they told me to come back in 4 days' time. They needed to rework all 1,200 pieces, or majority of the 1,200 pieces. So I just wonder, you know, if people ship direct to FBA, or even they ship to a prep company in the US, yeah?
Yeah.
I mean, how would they fix it?
Exactly. So, yeah, so usually I've had that where I just got to chuck them, usually.
Yeah, or ship them back to China to get them reload, and then ship them back again. It's like, you know, they don't make any money that way. So I've actually, I mean... So the inspection company is really good, but the inspection company would be like black or white, and they pretty much go there and tell you, okay, we rejected them, which may be a good thing, because when I was there, they were like trying to negotiate with me to take the rejects, and I'm like, they were offering me discounts, you know, and this, that, and that. Yeah. I was like, yeah, I'm not interested. I want good quality products, so. But in the end, I ended up inspecting all 1,200, like I told you, and I only got 928 good ones, so it's pretty... Pretty rubbish, really.
Yeah, what's the quick math on that? 1,200.
25%, is that
something? Yeah, like, let's say 982 over 1,200. Yeah, it's about 81% you accepted. So, yeah, like 19% is rejected. So
yeah, you know, even the factory admitted that they needed reworking, and they needed to re-inspect the 1,200. When they reinspected them, they didn't look for any other problems. So then when I went back there, I started to find other things, like they put the logo on upside down, stupid things like this. So all the labels weren't in straight. It's really annoying anyway. I mean, but I wouldn't say it's just this factory, you know. I've done this week, actually. I've been to two factories this week and inspected. Some were my goods and some were some goods for another, for a customer. And... start with the customer's goods. I mean, on the customer's goods, it was some clothes. I unbagged them, and you know, the first two I unbagged were dirty. And looked like they'd been kicked across the floor. And then one of the other, and then a few more later in, I found the like washing instruction labels that put them in around the wrong way. But they were kind of upside down compared to all the rest. It's not a serious problem, but And then when I went to one of my suppliers, I found they'd just completely labeled all my products incorrectly. Yeah, so they were going to end up sending them all to the wrong warehouses. And
unbelievable.
It was just a total mess. Basically, I ended up just saying to the supplier, "Yeah, just go away and let me do it myself."
Yeah, exactly. there's one I got is these e-commerce sites. I won't say one, but ships from China direct, like kind of like B2C, you know, direct to consumer. And one of my friends in the U.S. told me it's like a friend, but got a wedding dress. I don't know who I really buy a wedding dress from China, but it had blood on it when she got it. And it was that's pretty unbelievable. But maybe somebody cut their hand on your packaging or something.
Yeah, maybe.
It's pretty insane.
So, I mean, that's three different suppliers I visited and three different suppliers I've found problems with. So, you know, I'm sure if the reject level's like a reasonable level, obviously, then it's great. But now I've created like a big commitment, you know, for my first vendor, saying like, all of these problems aren't acceptable. Don't waste my time, yeah, to show me any of these, and don't waste your time assemble any of these, yeah.
So that's like with a production sample, you got like the one exactly like you have, do you have like a checklist, a spec sheet, or?
Well, what I done was I took photos of all the rejects when I went there, when I rejected the 272 or whatever. you know, I took photos of all the different faults and then just put that into a document and just send it to them with a purchase order, you know, and said, you know, none of these faults are acceptable. So
that's cool.
Yeah, so I'm hoping my next shipment is due on the actually 1 week today, 28th of January, which is too close to Chinese New Year.
Yeah, that is.
And also my sales girl told me, oh, I'm leaving on the 25th of January. So it's like, oh, great. So when I get there probably won't be any staff. And it's going to be a bit of a nightmare, but I need to get these products out because I'm running out of stock.
I don't know if the show will be on by then. Maybe we can patch in like an update on this for the release. See what happens.
Well, I've already been there this week to push them. Yeah, that's why I went to Dongguan this week to push them, because I know it's very close to Chinese New Year, and originally the date they gave me was the 15th of March, which is like miles away, and I'm running out. You know, I'm already out of stock on one thing, and the other ones are very, very close, if not run out actually by now.
Got it.
But all in all, actually, the product was pretty successful. In the first month, I did around 12,000 US.
Awesome.
And it's about 55% profit. So after all fees and freight costs and everything. So,
nice.
Yeah, it's pretty successful.
Yeah, we were talking about that. That's great.
Yeah, and I think, you know, one of the key things about having successful products is to, you know, differentiate them, make them stand out from the other ones. And you can do it with just photos on some of them, you know, on some products. You know, if you've got something the same, but you've got really good lifestyle product, really good lifestyle photos, sorry, this can make a huge difference. One of my friends in the UK, he's doing some products and he's just put up new photos with like models and stuff like that in. And, you know, his sales have increased like 300% or something like that. So
awesome. Yeah, it's true. It sometimes sounds almost, you know, unbelievable, but yeah, I mean, just making these enhancements to the descriptions and you know, product photos. I've also heard the packet, you know, even after they buy, right, you're a lot, especially if it's a Chinese seller or an inexperienced seller, are you investing in packaging at all, or are you just using stock packaging?
No, I designed some packaging for my product. So there was maybe 10 other people selling this product of mine. Nobody else. I chose a picture of any packaging. You know.
Ah, oh, nice.
They deliver them all in a plastic bag, and that's it. Yeah, I'm sure there's no packaging. So, you know, the packaging costs 15 cents a product. So it's like money well spent in my mind. I'm selling my product for like double the price of my nearest competitor. And okay, they're selling much more than me, but I don't want to sell mine so cheap. The environment that I've been working in before is all about luxury products and like customer experience from the moment they get the box and open the box, you know, how to lay out the inside and stuff like that. Yeah. So
awesome. And
so I'm just thinking along these lines.
US market mostly, or?
Yeah, this product actually is only suitable for the US. Actually, that's a lie. It's suitable for the US and Japan. I have sent 50 pieces to Japan, but at the moment I'm not being very successful there. I've managed to sell 2 in a month, where at my peak in the US I was selling 30 plus a day. So, but I think Japan is an interesting market. I've got some Korean friends that I do in Japan and tell me that they're making big money there. So
great. You know, I'm really happy for you, and I'm just trying to think of some listeners. I know I've talked to some people that aren't as fortunate as you with sourcing, first of all, and then also maybe finding the right product. So it seems like you got it on your first try, basically. Was there any learning curve, or you just had maybe any insight on how you identified it?
Well, the product was related to my old job, really. So I actually had a whiteboard in my office with this product written on it for about the last 2 years. So started earlier.
got it. So yeah, I just want to give some reality to some of the listeners that are maybe like thinking like, wow, like 1 month, that much, you know, and first shot. So
yeah, so I mean, this product was on my whiteboard for a couple of years, and it was a product that I thought would sell. It was related to the industry I was in, but I wasn't 100% sure. And originally I was only going to make 500, and then I kept convincing myself that I should make more. And I really wish that I made even more. I made 1200. I only got 928, like I said, but yeah. You know, it was Christmas time. It arrived, and you know, I don't know if the people listening know Google Trends. Google Trends for this type of product showed a huge spike in the Christmas period. So over Christmas, I was doing like 30 a day, and I had zero feedback, and I was using no PPC at all, and I was selling 30 a day. I was lucky enough that my product is an accessory to go with somebody else's product. So if someone's searching for their product, they might be finding my product. And I think that was one of the key things actually that made it pick up so quickly. Yeah. I was only expecting 5 or 10 a day. And I'm now down at 5 or 10 a day, which I was expecting in January. So, but my thought is like try and get maybe like 10 or 20 products that are doing 5 or 10 a day. And I think, you'll be quids in. I've got 3 or 4 other products on the way that I think, well, one I've already tested in the US, and I sent 10 pieces. It sold out today, so I think that one should be okay. And one other one I think could be a really big seller. And again, it was just like I was scouting through Amazon. This one's a little bit different. And I come across the product, and I started reading all the reviews. And I saw quite a lot of negative reviews about some problem with it. And at the time, I was thinking, oh, I wonder how I could fix that problem. And then kind of put it on the back burner in my mind and wasn't really thinking about it. And went off and started looking at some other products. And then kind of managed to link the product I was looking at to this product and thought, oh, wait there, that can solve the problem. Yeah, this product can solve the problem on the other product. So then I just made like 200 pieces. Now that should have been in the US in like November, and I'm just having it collected today. So.
Oh man. Yeah. So I know some listeners that have been really struggling with, like, I think they're trying to be too innovative. So especially if they're not here in China, it's very painful with samples, shipping, and yeah, I feel their pain. They wait for like a month to get a sample, it's not right. Wait another month, not right. So
yeah, I can understand that. And actually, you know, the original thing that was driving me a bit crazy, I remember last year probably around the same time I contacted you, I went out for a walk where I was working in, like I say, in China. I went out for a walk at lunchtime. I was listening to a podcast, and it was a guy from Belgium was talking, and he was saying he was doing $30,000 a month on Amazon, and he was like, he was living in Belgium, he was buying his products in China, and he was selling them in the US. And I'm like, wait there, I'm sitting in an office in China. Yeah, I really should be doing this. And not only that, I've been selling on eBay and Amazon. Like, I mean, eBay I was doing from, I think, 2002. and Amazon from like 2007. But when I come to China, I was selling secondhand stuff in the UK. And when I come to China, I was kind of like out of my comfort zone. I was like, oh, how do you post this stuff? And, you know, where would I find secondhand stuff? So I wasn't really thinking about private label and stuff like that. And then I started listening to the podcast and it started getting me excited because, you know, I'm a purchasing person and, you know, I understand products and how things go together and processes and stuff like that. So I really wanted to develop some of my own products. And my thinking now for a like long-term strategy is do some of my own products and throw in a few off-the-shelf products as well. Maybe with a very small twist or, you know, a nice box or something like that that makes them look good or bundle them or something like this. So this is kind of where I'm coming from now.
Yeah, I think that's good advice. You know, I keep thinking of people I talk to, but one's like just he doesn't want to do something so normal. Like he wants to make it something really different. And it's been quite a few months. So I think he should do something like yours, you know, like you say, just maybe do a slight twist on the product. I think something maybe the other angle is if you're doing a brand new type product, maybe get on maybe crowdfunding like Kickstarter or something. Right. And whereas like Amazon, I think this seems like what I've learned is finding something that's selling and make maybe a better enhancement on it that will make it better.
Yeah. That's true. I think it's really difficult. You know, the beauty of being here is they made me the sample. And when it was going to be ready, I went to their office and then I saw it and said, oh, that's not quite what I was thinking. And then explained to them what I was thinking. And they were, it was simple enough that they could go to the factory and make me a sample while I was sitting there and bring me a new one and say, was this what you were thinking?
Yeah,
and I was like, nearly. And then they wander off again and come back with it. Yeah, that's exactly what I want.
Perfect.
Yeah, which you can't really do very quickly if you're in the US or something like that.
Yeah, like you were saying at the beginning of the show, it's you know, all this outsourcing here has forced us to have to be here to invent stuff, right? It's hard for the inventor over in the West to be innovative and or at least fast. So
yeah. I mean, I have started looking at doing some business to help other people do Amazon, but it's really early days with that at the moment. And you know, I've just got one or two customers that I'm dealing with. I'm trying to help them get their products up and running out in China.
Cool.
But
awesome. But yeah, if you want to,
it is early days.
I could send you some people, or there's definitely listeners that are always asking me. So if you want to link we did it quite a bit today. So maybe I think we'll have to get you back on later, and maybe after the Chinese New Year, I think the show will probably go on in around Chinese New Year. So maybe I can get a little 2-minute clip, patch it in here at the end about your shipment before or after the holiday.
yeah. I've got three shipments. Like, I just arranged one shipment to come from Ningbo down here to my apartment. It's like 500 kilos.
Wow.
Because I wanted to quality check it, but like the guy told me it was $120 to deliver it here, and I thought it's gonna end up being cheaper than flying up there to quality check it and like getting a hotel and then coming back and days out of my life. So I just said, I'll deliver it to my apartment and I'll check it.
Interesting strategy. Well, send them back the rejects or what?
Wow, I'm hoping there are no rejects. I already had a few samples from this guy. This guy seems to know what he's doing, luckily.
All right.
So,
cool.
He made me 20 or 30 pieces before, which were all good. So
cool. All right, Chris. So thanks so much for sharing and openly. And also, I know you've done meetups before in Canton Fair. I don't know if you have anything planned or other things, but how can people, you know, follow up with you, social media, websites, emails, however you feel like sharing?
Well, for sure, I'm going to do the meetups again this year at Canton Fair. I haven't finalized the dates yet because there's a lot of other things going on, a lot of other meetups and things like that.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I need to try and figure out how to wedge them in there, yeah, but... I mean, last year the Canton Fair meetups actually were really good, and we had a lot of people. We had 22 people come to one of them, and a lot of really, really interesting people. Some people doing like $500,000 a month on Amazon.
Awesome.
So yeah, if you're in Guangzhou for Canton Fair, yeah, then you can probably find the link for that on one of the numerous Amazon Facebook groups. I usually throw it on all of the popular ones to say that I'm going to arrange that, and I don't charge anything for it. It's just basically a free networking event.
Cool.
Yeah, and if people want to get in contact with me, they can email me at chris@sourcefrom.asia.
Cool.
Or they can add me on WeChat if they got WeChat, which is chris_Zhuhai. That's Zhuhai.
Awesome.
I always recommend to all of my friends who are dealing with Chinese suppliers to get their WeChat, because in Asia, they tend to use like instant messaging services like WeChat much more than email. And it's much, much more efficient. You can just, you know, like they've got a question. Oh, what color should this be? Or should this be gray? You can answer it in seconds. Yes, it should be. If they send you an email, maybe you don't see it for a few hours, then you reply, they don't see it for a few hours. So I always tell them, get the WeChat. And, you know, many times I send messages to my supplier saying, oh, I know it's really late, but in the morning when you read this, can you give me an answer on this question? And because the guys are living in dormitories at the factory, they're very bored and they to answer you. A lot of them tend to answer you then, like even at 12 o'clock in the morning. So that's WeChat.
Yeah. Got a little bit at the very end, but a little choppy at the end, Chris. But I think you were saying, just so listen, I think we'll leave that in maybe, or you were saying at the very end, like they're responsive even at night when they're in the, because they're bored enough in the factory.
Yeah, that's right. They're in the dormitory and they're bored. So I always phrase it in such a way that I don't expect them to answer it like at 11 or 12 o'clock at night, but often they do.
All right. I get like emails in my WeChat now, like somebody like puts two paragraph like messages in a message, but anyway.
Yeah. Definitely.
Cool. Well, thanks so much, Chris. And we'll be in touch. And I think maybe I'll patch in if we can do that, do another 2-minute call in a couple of weeks and see what happens with your shipments.
Okay. Yeah, no problem.
Cool.
Okay.
All right, so we're in the post-production here, and I thought it'd be cool to get Chris back on because it is after Chinese New Year that this show is going live, and we met yesterday actually at the Global Sources FBA meetup too, and he gave me some insights, so I thought it'd be fun to share with the listeners just a little bit of quick update of how things went after, before and after Chinese New Year.
Yeah, basically there was three shipments. One, I went to the factory and was pleasantly surprised. All the quality problems from the last time had gone, and managed to get that one shipped out on time. And that was once all arrived in Amazon selling. The second one had some technical problems with it. It all seemed okay when I went to the factory, but some of it has arrived in Amazon and they've said it's damaged. And also there were some problems with the product labeling, which is a bit of a nightmare.
Oh, no.
It's a learning curve. And so I've pulled that delivery out. Luckily, it was only a small sort of trial order. So I pulled that out into a prepping company in the US to get them to basically inspect it and rebox it. I think it should just need reboxing and maybe relabeling. But probably means no profits on them products. But on the first few days it was up, I did sell 16 or something like that. So I can see that it's going to be a good product anyway. So I'm kind of prepping now to sort the next order out. And the third shipment, I made a decision to get it delivered to my apartment, which was a little bit crazy because it was like 500 kilos of stuff, and done some inspection and then labeled it all up. But I couldn't find anyone to move it to my freight forwarder. So although my freight forwarder could have sent it out, I couldn't get anyone to give it to my freight forwarder. So basically it's just gone from my apartment today. Today's the 18th of February. So,
wow. So that's always the fun stuff. But again, it helps that you're here, right? I mean, it would have been a much more difficult, you know, I noticed a lot of listeners are not here, but in China or in Asia, but.
Yeah. I mean, for sure it helps. I mean, you know, I bought the delivery to my apartment, and actually I just done a very simple inspection on this, was just like to weigh every box, which is, I'd actually asked my supplier to do exactly the same. And I started weighing them and found a few that were too light and too heavy. And surprise, surprise, when I opened them, there's like bits missing out of them or extra bits in them. So although I bought it here, it was probably better that I bought it here anyway. I didn't find too many. I think out of like 800 boxes, I found four that had a problem. But it's within an allowance that I would say is okay. But
okay. Well, thanks for the update. And so I think I don't even know what to tell people about Chinese New Year either. I'm not involved right now with manufacturing, but I just don't know what should people do to kind of predict their supply chain, or is that I don't want to put a pop question on you, but
I'm okay to answer that because it's a real nightmare. Like, you know, even though the freight forwarder told me like they're shut from, I can't remember what the date was, but like 4 days before that, I can't find anyone to deliver it to the freight forwarder. So the freight forwarder is telling me I'm open, but I couldn't find anyone to deliver it. And then when I start, then I kind of considered to like get a car to come and collect it and then move it to a different place to get it forwarded and stuff like this. But then my freight forwarder was telling me, oh, now UPS in Hong Kong are saying there's a backlog and probably it won't ship anyway. So it was like, okay, then. So I decided to ignore it. But we're now the 18th of February, and I know quite a lot of people office wise return back to work this week, but you know, I tried to arrange some appointments for next week to visit some factories, and from the four factories we contacted, three of them told us only the office workers are in next week and the factory workers won't be back for another week. And the other one, there was no answer, so they're probably not back yet.
Crazy. Thanks for giving us this update, and I'm glad we can put on the show with everybody to hear at the end. So,
no problem. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Chris, for just putting it all out there. I remember how frustrated I was back in 2006 buying off Alibaba and Global Sources with Skype at night from my Manhattan fifth floor walk up in Lower East Side. And even if you're here in China, like Chris is, they're still wrestling, and even 10 years later now in the year 2016. So I don't know, maybe it's getting easier. What would you think? I'd love to get more case studies like Chris on the show. I've been helping get quite a few Amazon FBA sellers set up with their Hong Kong businesses via our agency's HK VIP package. I'm queuing some of them up to come on the show in the future and share. How about you guys? Or do you know somebody? Please shoot me an email at mike@globalfromasia.com and say Amazon FBA from China in the subject line. Let's get some more cool case studies. Also, I decided to refresh the podcast reviews on iTunes, and to my amazement, we received 3 this week. That's a record. So after a month or two with no reviews, got me excited, and I'm going to cherish these and read one off per show at the end of each show. So here's the first one. It's from Hong Kong, left on February 9th, 5 stars, AC8888HK, and he or she says, I listen to a lot of podcasts and a habit of subscribing and unsubscribing after a couple of shows, but this is a podcast I've kept subscribing to. It's refreshing to hear an entrepreneur talking completely honestly with specific tips, advice about starting a business in Hong Kong and China and Asia. I know a lot of people are interested in setting up a company or doing business in this growing part of the world. There's a lot of BS and outdated advice out there, but this podcast keeps it totally real. Highly recommend, and check out Mike's books too. They continue the mix of personal journey plus actionable advice. So actually, I know who that was. It was Angela Chung. She's awesome. And I'm glad she finally got to figure out get the technology to work to leave the review, because I know she's tried before. So it's awesome. And thank you so much. And I really love what I do, and I love helping you guys out. All these reviews, iTunes reviews, buying my books, agency services, packages, or whatever, even telling your friends or sharing on social media, it's all much appreciated. And I'm pushing even harder than ever now with another kid. Having 2, I am on fire. So, see you guys next week. We have a ton of amazing interviews already recorded and ready to go. And let's rock. Bye-bye.
To get more info about running an international business via Hong Kong, please visit our website at www.globalfromasia.com. That's www.globalfromasia.com. Also, be sure to subscribe to our iTunes feed. Thanks for tuning in.